And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
More here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA Utiful Studios of Freedoms with an Ass, Phoenix, on our home. Damn it. I got to get good at that one day. All right. We have James Corbett, the Corbett Report, edited, webmastered, written, produced, and hosted by Mr. James Corbett. James Corbett's been living and working in Japan since 2004. He started the Corbett Report website in 2007 as an outlet for independent critical analyses of politics, society, history, and economics. Since then, he's written and recorded thousands and thousands of audio and video and everybody and been everywhere and done everything, even a TED Talk. You know, I thought that was cool. Okay, now, these are the latest videos. Well, I'm just going to rattle off a bunch of them here, and we'll get to, I know which ones I want to talk about. Welcome to the driverless future, where they just lock the doors and deliver you to the police station. Minority Report. Well, we'll talk about that. You are being gamed. Everything is like a game. It's a game. Points, game, influence, game. This is a science of getting you to do certain things. The governments now have apps to it. Were you a good little citizen? Did you report? Did you brush your teeth? Did you tie your shoe? Seriously. So, you know, we'll talk about that. Past, present, and future of the Federal Reserve. Well, we've been through that a lot. There's something new. We'll get with that. The Library of Babel, film, literature, and the New World Order. It's the internet and who controls all the information. And we say this about that and newspeak and memory hole and all. Yeah. Here it comes. I remember when the internet first started, you know, very soon after they had a website called the Memory Hole. And you would go there to find stuff that got deleted, you know, even back then. And then it got bought up by somebody. And, you know, I said, oh. James Corbett on learned helplessness and learned optimism. Maybe we'll get to that. Just be evil. The history Google doesn't want you to know. All right. There's also how to overthrow the government in four easy steps. Maybe we'll get to that. Highway wars, the battle to develop Eurasia. Okay, that might be interesting. Zuck for president 2020, the nightmare begins. Oh, James, what's one of your favorites there? Where do we start?
Let's start with Zuck. Why not?
Zuck. Okay, Zuck for Prez 2020. Tell me all about it.
All right. Well, of course, everyone knows we're talking about Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. And everyone knows because, of course, we've all been inundated with all the photo ops that Zuck has been engaged in recently. Visiting, you know, steel workers in Ohio and milking cows in Idaho and whatever else he's doing. It's ridiculous. It's part of his annual pledge or whatever. He does an annual challenge for himself. And this year's challenge was to go to every one of the U.S. 50 states that he hasn't been to before and meet ordinary working people, a.k.a. this is the beginning of his step into politics. I think we all see this coming. And I'm not just making that up off the top of my head. He has hired one of the Clinton slash Obama top pollster slash advisors to be an advisor for him. And he has put in a special clause in the Facebook CEO, the changeover of power contingency plan, so that there's a special clause in there. He can continue to run Facebook if he ever does something like, oh, I don't know, go and work for government. That's specifically in his contract now.
His succession thing, or what do they call it?
Yeah, succession. That's it. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, what does it say? I mean, who? How is that going to happen? How does he? What do you mean he still gets to what? Yeah, they're all over Trump's butt for even having anything.
Yeah, I mean, it is bizarre. I mean,
but
as
I get
far
to
as
keep
know,
my
is...
control the universe card.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, this is in the Facebook internal policy or whatever for the succession. And it was written in there. Zuckerberg was involved in negotiation on this point specifically with whoever it was. I can't remember. And there was some controversy that the person who was advising him about this was advising him, not the shareholders of the company. But at any rate, it's in there. And I've got a link in my article to the TechCrunch article talking about this back at the beginning of the year when it was revealed. Oh, yeah, by the way, he's got it worked in. And I think it's probably intended more for like a congressional stint or a Senate stint or something like that. But who knows? I mean,
fake,
I'm sure
psych, it's president. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Well, one day or another, he's going to try to run for it. I think it's pretty obvious by now. And I think that's just, I mean, that's a telling sign of so many different things. I mean, obviously, right now, we're going to see the celebrities running for office kind of thing kicking off with The Rock and Kid Rock. Am I getting that right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That Kid Rock can't run. He's got to use his real name. Damn it.
Yeah.
Like it matters. You know, who cares? The Zuckerberg doing this. You get the impression that he's been on the shelf and supported by, and it's kind of a deep state incutel of we got this guy from beginning kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, isn't he supposed to be associated and somehow by blood he's really the child of something, somebody? Is that true? What was that about?
I don't even know specifically what you're saying, but I'm sure that rumor has been floated out there. Everyone who's anyone is the secret love child of someone.
Yeah, something like that.
So they say.
I don't care.
Here's the stuff that we do know. We have documentation on. Everyone's seen the Hollywood version of the story of The Social Network written by Aaron Sorkin, right? Funny how he didn't include some of the more interesting pieces of that story. If we're talking about the founding of Facebook.
Yeah, like, not that CIA meeting, right?
Well, how about the chat logs that were from 2004, just when he was starting up the site, and he was chatting with a friend, and he said, if you ever need info about anyone at Harvard, just ask. And his friend says, well, what's going on? What happened? And he tells him he's got the personal details of over 4,000 Harvard students now. And his friend says, how do you manage that? And Zuck says, they just gave it to me.
Hey,
I
asked him.
He said, they trust me. Dumb. And then I'm not sure. I guess I can't swear on air. But dumb Fs is what he says right there in the chat logs. And not just that. Not only did he treat his users with contempt from the very beginning, but then he went ahead and used some of the information they provided him to hack into the email accounts of some of Facebook's earliest users. That is documented. That really happened. And this is the guy.
Run for president. Yeah. Run for president. Yeah. See, this would be awesome. I don't know what the hell they're thinking. You know, this is going to, it's like Big Brother, you know, going to therapy and you get the video or something.
It's absolutely mind-boggling that this guy is not universally hated. I can't imagine anyone who likes him, but I guess that's maybe a reflection of the circles that I run in. But if you are looking for the CIA connection, of course there is one. It's a little bit tangential. There was Jim Breyer, who was the managing partner of Excel Partners, which is a venture capital firm that invested $13 million of startup money in Facebook way back at the beginning in 2005 when they were doing their first round of funding. Jim Breyer was the head of the National Venture Capital Association, along with Gilman Louie, who was the CEO of InQtel. What's InQtel? It's the CIA's own venture capital firm. So there's at least a two-step.
They insulated themselves just a little bit.
Yeah, we didn't directly invest in Facebook.
Just
so
a little bit.
Okay.
We do.
But then look at one of the other earliest investors, Peter Thiel, a Bilderberg attendee, and not just an attendee, a steering committee member. So, I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, this is, you know, Zuckerberg running, that would be awesome. I'm just there. And then let me see, against who? Trump? I think it'll come out. That'd be awesome. All right. More entertainment for the rest of my life. We'll be right back.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any
roads. No roads. All roads lead to, I don't know, to home. That's all I'm really worried about. I'm going to find home. All right. James Corbett, we got the subject of, you know, Mark Zuckerberg running for president of the United States of America from Facebook. That is, man, they're going all in on that one. You know, I've seen this before. It's like you take the bench, you know, and you're putting it on the field, you know, and you're going to the back office. You're getting when they had, I tell you the feeling, and maybe you remember this if you're old enough. When George W. Bush picked Dick Cheney as the VP guy, I go, man, they don't want to be like Satan. They just want to have him sitting on the throne kind of thing. You know, it's just they go to the back office and they bring the boys up and they just set them right there. We'll just get to it. You know, so when they do this kind of, you know, Zuckerberg thing or something, they're just men are all in. You know, this is I'm going, OK, they that worried. I don't know. Maybe the data from Facebook is telling them there's a lot of pissed off people out there and you can dial and tune and do whatever. And you think it's just Zuckerberg and friends? There is every freaking government on the planet, influence, marketing, corporate CEO, we rule and pluck from the minds of the people some money to buy my crap. I mean, it's to get you thinking and doing certain. This is the internet, man, it gives you a lot of information. My thing is, I don't think that they can get away with it because of human nature. We are built certain things, you know, a stimulus, you know, the maximum pleasure, least pain, and they cause a bunch of pain and not you. So they have to change us. Can they change us with an internet? Do they have to use chemicals? Do they have to use conditioned response? Do they got to scare the crap out of you and offer solution and this, hey, what they call it, Hegelian dialectic kind of stuff? I mean, I'm. What do you think? Before we go on to something else, why Zuckerberg? Is it because he loves humanity so much? I mean, why do you think they're doing this?
It's because he's filthy, stinking rich, and clearly, I don't know, if not psychopathic, at least clearly does not exhibit normal human traits. I mean, there are literally questions up on whatever Quora.com or whatever. Is Mark Zuckerberg a robot? There is something very strangely mechanical about him. I think the Bush analogy might actually be a particularly apt one, because if it came to a Zuck presidency, or at least even a campaign, it wouldn't, to my mind, it wouldn't be the question of Zuckerberg being the president. It would be, who'd he be picking for a running mate? Who would be the Zuckerberg VP? Because I imagine that would be who would be really running the show. It's just that he represents a certain clique and clearly has the cachet and the name recognition and whatever, and, you know, is interesting enough to perhaps get some people's attention on the left side.
Okay.
Spectrum.
So they have gone out and they're looking at the farm teams, the minor league. Who are they going to bring up? Okay. And they go, Mark, it's time to pay your dues, man. And of course, they do it in a different way. They squeeze your bicep and go, ooh, you're so strong and you're so smart and you're going to save the planet. And we want to help and please. And, you know, because you are the only one, whatever it is they got to do. And then if he goes, nah, they got to go, no, you the one. Feel me? You know, so I'm getting the impression that he's got to be a willing participant in this, what they got to do to manage him. But at some time, 30 years from now, the book from the ex-wife or ex-kid or ex-something, you know, and we're going to find out what's up. So I'm waiting for that movie.
I mean, there's dirt on everyone. And I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm saying he's clearly preparing for it. But hopefully something will come along to derail it. Like, remember a decade ago, people were genuinely worried that there was going to be some constitutional amendment to make room for President Governator Schwarzenegger. Until, of course, his political career fell apart in a blaze of glory. So, you know, I mean, anything can happen.
Well, it was predicted by Demolition Man with Sly Stallone. Remember?
I remember the movie. I don't remember that.
In that movie, he's going, and you're talking about, well, when Arnold Schwarzenegger, because he went in cryo for decades or something. Well, when Arnold Schwarzenegger, they changed the Constitution to allow him to be president or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
And I'm going, okay, what's some of the, let's go on some of the other issues here. No. Driverless future. Oh, no. I want to make sure we get this. You are being gamed. I love that video. That was awesome. All right. Go ahead and fill us in on that one.
All right. Thank you. Well, that was a podcast that I made 7 years ago, so it's looking pretty prescient. It's from 2010.
No way. But, yeah. That was 7 years ago?
That was 7 years ago. We just made the video version, so we posted that video version up. But the podcast
Holy
itself
crap.
Was from 2010. So, you know, I know what I'm talking about. I know what's coming down the pipe. And for people who haven't seen it, this is about the idea of gamification. You didn't know the word game could be used in that way? Well, it certainly can. Turning everything into a game to incentivize people to keep playing whatever it is you want them to play. And by play, we don't mean something fun. We mean basically any activity you want them to do. And
okay, now wait a minute. This was a podcast, and then recently you took and added video or graphics to it and then put it up as a YouTube or something, right?
That's right. So I have a Corporate Report Extras YouTube channel where I do things like that. I take some of my old audio podcasts and I put up the video version. So this is one of those.
Yeah, it seemed kind of current to me is from the video, but I guess you're clairvoyant.
Well, it's I mean, this is the stuff that's taking shape. And these are the issues that that if people who are in the know see it coming from a long way away. And in that podcast, I had a snippet from a presentation that was made at some gaming conference in 2010 by this guy. And it's up on YouTube as the most disturbing presentation ever, I think is the title on YouTube. And actually, for once, it lives up to that kind of clickbaity title.
Yeah, I was disturbed.
It is. It's really, really disturbing. And there's a number of things that are disturbing about it. But this guy is basically, he's actually at a university and studying some aspect of this gamification thing that's going on. And basically he paints this picture of what your daily life will look like at some point in the future where everything becomes a game. So when you wake up in the morning and you brush your teeth, your toothbrush has an RFID sensor and it can sense, you know, how long you brush your teeth for. And if you brush your teeth for 2 minutes, you get, you know, 3 points, you know, bonus points or whatever that you can then use to whatever, buy something at the store.
Okay, now wait a minute. He predicted this. That video was from 10.
That was 2010.
That guy that did that
presentation. Yep.
Well, this stuff is happening now.
Of course. Exactly. I mean, it's not even
China and Canada's doing it.
Exactly right.
They got their own app.
So when this is what brought it up to my mind, and that's why we put out the video version of it just recently, is because now we're seeing it happen. And for people who didn't catch that, there's this Carrot app in Canada where literally the government is sponsoring this app and will kick in a bunch of money to purchase points, like you know, Petro-Canada points, like gasoline, you know, buying gas or things like that, or movie tickets, so that kind of thing. And you earn the points by doing healthy things, like, you know, walking a mile or jogging to work instead of taking the car or whatever, or taking a bus instead or whatever, just, you know, under that rubric. But of course, it also is things like if you correctly, you know, take a test and get the correct answers on the flu shot, you know, why you need to get the flu shot and things like this. So, of course, it is a propaganda vehicle. The government will make a game out of being a good citizen and jumping through their hoops and doing the things they want you to do. And if you come up with the right answer, you get points. And everyone loves
getting
points.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give it to my robot to brush his teeth and my sneakers and everything and tell him, yo, just give me the money.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this is a dystopian thing, man. They make movies about stuff like this. It's real life. And who predicted it? Mr. James Corbett. More when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back. Game
Corbett. Corbett Report. Oh, all kinds of good clairvoyant stuff. We can see the future. You know, one thing I wanted to mention real quick, behind Trump last night, there was a guy, a black man standing there, Blacks for Trump. And then it folded down and it's blacksfortrump2020.com. And on his shirt, it said gods, plural, two. .com And you go there and, you know, blah, 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 some religious stuff. And it definitely wasn't, I don't know, president. I don't know why they have. But the main point that they were making was, as those freaking Cherokee Democrats, I'm not even sure what the hell that means, but the Democrats own the slaves. They were a bunch of them Democrats. They were slave owners. You know, Republicans kind of freed the slaves. And now I can't believe the Democrats going on that they're not, you know, slave owners. And I'm going, okay, I guess there's that, you know, and then if you went further, it got weird. But, you know, it's images. It's all about images. So I'm going, okay, do you know what that Cherokee thing means, where that came from? All right, another thing to worry about. All right, the gaming thing. This is what we're going to do. Finish up on the gaming. You're gamed. And that goes right over into the Library of Babel, Film, Literature, and the New World Order. That goes right into Just Be Evil, the history Google doesn't want you to know. So, of course, I want to get to that, what they don't want me to know. But let's go ahead and finish up on the gaming thing and segue into these others.
Well, I just wanted to make the point that one of the things that I found creepy about that presentation we were talking about in the last segment, about this guy talking about how everything's going to be gamed and you're going to be getting points for every good thing that you do, quote unquote, all day, which, as we say, is already happening now with this new Canadian app. And probably coming to a town near you pretty soon. But the point that I want to make was that it's interesting. We were talking about this off air, and I think that the guy in this presentation was genuinely enthusiastic about this. And he goes on to make the point towards the end of that presentation that your children, your grandchildren, are going to know more about you than anyone has ever known about anybody in the history of the planet, because they're going to have all your data about everything that you were doing on a day-to-day basis, and they're going to be able to look, you know, see what Grandpa was doing on, you know, August 23rd, 2017. Oh, he did this, he did this, he did this, he did this. And he was saying, well, this is good. It will make us better people, because when we're living with that in mind, that, you know, this is going to be recorded for posterity, well, we won't want to do bad things, so we'll be better people because of this, which is the exact argument of the Panopticon. That is what the Panopticon is. It's that jail where the prisoners don't know when they're being watched by the jailers, so they act as if they are always being watched. Well, that's it. The internalization of the Panopticon. We're always being watched, so you better be good. You know, Santa Claus is making his list and checking it twice, so you better be a good boy. And he's genuinely enthusiastic about that at the end of the presentation. I posit that you didn't pick up on that because it's titled The Most Disturbing Presentation Ever on YouTube. Of course, that wasn't the actual name of the presentation. And it is genuinely creepy to people with their heads screwed on straight.
Like, No. This is what I saw. I saw a guy that was doing it. It seemed like he already had contracts ready. He's getting paid by the man to do the kind of do it. And this was, and he saw where this was going. So to keep his contract, to be able to, he goes, it's inevitable. It's coming anyway, you know? And I kind of got the feeling, if you watch it again, I'm going, he's warning us.
It's interesting. I'll watch it again. And tell you what, I'll see if I can get him on the program. We'll settle it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, see, well, of course, now he's not, you know, maybe after he already got his money, he lives in the Caymans or something. Yeah. But, you know, I got the impression that he was enthusiastic. Yeah, and it's going to happen, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that. It's inevitable. But I'm here at TED to tell you guys, you know, freaking, or wherever the hell it was, you know, the freaking run away. No, just be aware, because you're right. That's one thing he was saying. He's going, look, everything that we do is going to be able to be scrutinized later by generations. You know, grandkids are going to be going, you know, you're a good, bad guy. So will it influence you? Yes. And the governments are doing this. They're going. So I got the impression that he was sharing with me without being outing himself directly as, you know, not, he was just sharing the whole thing and what to be worried about. That was the impression that I got, you know, that how else was he going to do it and get invited to the next thing? Yeah. He wasn't going to be James Corbett, you know, and go, right, be feared, you know, but I got the warning. It was definite. And when I didn't know that this was in 10 and, you know, because it seems so current, and I'm going, you know, hell, what's he talking about? It's already happening. I'm going, Oh, James just pulled this out of the Wayback Machine and said, here we go, because it's happening now. So 7 years, that's how long it takes.
Speaking of pulling things out of the Wayback Machine, Library of Babel.
Yes.
So that one, what year do you think that was from?
Let's see.
You can't cheat. Don't look it up. It's from 2015.
Well, no. I just wanted to look at the whole title here to see what the deal was. Because I remember watching it. I don't know where it came from. Alexandria. I mean, I don't know. It was Google. You know, it's just the internet. It's And why'd you say Babel? You know, that's the Tower of Babel. Why'd you call it Babel?
Okay. Well, first of all, this isn't me. This is Jorge Luis Borges, who was a great Argentinian writer. If you have not read Borges, you have not lived. So please go out and read his collected short stories. They're widely available. You can get into them quite easily, and if you're anything at all like me, you will find them fascinating. He writes these amazing, mind-bending, mind-blowing stories, like usually in an essay-like style about things that never existed but could, kind of things. I can't even describe them, but anyway.
Like Brazil or something, or Kurt Vonnegut kind of stuff? Or
yeah. Maybe a little bit, but really mind-blowing, crazy stuff. But anyway.
Sci-fi?
Kind of. Some of it could be sci-fi-ish, I guess. But anyway, so one of his stories was called The Library of Babel. And so I do a podcast, Film Literature in the New World Order, where I talk about books and movies and things. So as part of that, I talked about The Library of Babel 2 years ago, back in 2015. This is an old story. It's from, whatever, 1920s or something, I don't know. And the story is about a library that is essentially infinite, or at least for all intents and purposes, infinite. And it consists of room after room after room after room, hexagonal rooms, and on each of the six sides are five long shelves, and it from basically the floor to the roof, covered in shelves of books. And in these books is every possible combination of the letters and spaces and periods and commas, I think, are they all of the characters. All, every single possible permutation are just filling these books. And so there's billions and trillions and quadrillions and zazillions of books filled with all of these. And the amazing mind-bending part of Borges' story is he makes the point that every single thing in existence, everything that has ever been written, all of the works of Shakespeare, the Bible, the exegesis of the Bible, the true story of your entire life, millions of fake stories about you and your life, everything that could possibly be written is in these books, because every single permutation of letters is in these books. But the point is, the library is so large that you could and probably would spend your entire life going through the library and not finding a single sentence that actually made sense in any of these books, because there's so many possible permutations that 99.999999% of it is total gobbledygook, right? It's a mind-blowing idea, and when I read this, I was in university, and it was just,
Well, I'm going to blow your mind even more. It actually exists.
Yes, it does, online now.
You can go and put in any phrase, and all they have is 26 characters, I think, periods and commas, and you go in and put in any phrase, anything you write, Shakespeare, anything. There is enough. It's like monkeys pounding on a keyboard, and you have somewhere in this file has that whole thing, because it's an infinite number of combinations of characters, and it's there somewhere. So, boom. Well, James already knew, so his mind's not blown. He's still there. We'll be right back.
Freedom is the answer.
What's the question?
You're listening to Ernest Hancock. I want
to break free. And Mr. James Corbett. There he is. Any party? Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Is that gray in your beard? I see. I see you. I see you getting gray. Yeah, I know. I got gray too. And then, you know, Donna goes, hey, you're getting gray. And then, you know, years go by and I grow it back. Now she's like, yeah, it's okay now. I guess it's, you know, it was not pretty before. I guess when I get older. All right. This is the Babel, you know, Library of Babel. And we're going to go from there and segue into, you know, Just Be Evil, because this Library of Babel, the any everything, you'd think that now they couldn't get everything. And now they just have smart meters with smart devices and smart cameras of being smart about, you know, you, and they think they know everything. And then they put it on and display and see, you said this, and whatever context they take. I am just there, you know, control the populace to the point to where the people just go, you know, I don't care what you say, whether it's true or not. And I'm looking for who aggresses or something. I mean, we got to have a new standard. You know, what do you think is happening with this Babel thing? How are they going to use it?
Well, so here was my take on this. As I say, I was reading this story back in university, and it blew my mind, this idea, this infinite library, every book that's ever written is in there somewhere. And I thought, oh, that's amazing. You know, wouldn't it be amazing to be in that library? But no, I remember talking about this to a friend of the family at that time. So I was, whatever, 18, 19 years old or something. And the friend of the family was this computer science professor. And, you know, he'd been around the block a time or two. And so he said, no. You don't really get this story, James. This is a nightmare. The idea of all this information out there. But how do you sort through it without an index, without a filing system? It's just a nightmare. And now that when I reread that story today, from today's perspective, I'm like, yeah, how did I not see the horror of that story? It's really a horrific story. This idea of all of this gobbledygook and nonsense that you maybe, you know, your entire life, you might find one sentence of actual sense in there somewhere. Well, that's obviously a metaphor for the age we're living through, the internet age, the information age. So, but here we have a savior. We have someone that's going to index and file and sort through and deliver the information that you want. We actually have a librarian in this Babel that we have online. And who is that librarian? Google. Yeah. So what could possibly go wrong? So I say, I made this podcast again 2 years ago, and I had people, when I re-released this video version for my extras channel, people were saying, I can't believe this is 2 years old. It's like this is, you know, done today. Because of course, now people are starting to understand the problem of Google being that censor, that gatekeeper of information. Again, anyone who had their head screwed on straight saw where this was going, but people generally are waking up to it now with all of this censorship that's going on right now, and Google adjusting their algorithms. So certain websites that used to be up on the first page of results when you typed for certain keywords are now buried on the 107th page and will never be seen by anyone. That is the nightmare we're living through, and that is exactly what this story was about and the way that I approached it in this podcast. It's not the information itself, it's how do you access it? Who is that middleman between you and the information? And how can they shape your entire view of the world and what is and what isn't and what's true and what's not? They are the gatekeepers. They are the ones who show you the information. And you feel like you're doing it yourself, because you can scroll through, you know, a million pages of results if you want to. Of course, no one's going to. 99% of the people, 99% of the time, are going to click on the first thing that they see. And generally, that's a Wikipedia link, depending what
you're
searching for.
And who's going to be the ones that determine what is and is not available on the first page kind of thing? It's like YouTube heroes.
Yep.
They decide. They delete. They, you know, nope, not this one. Why?
And remember, it is happening. It is happening right now. There was just that story from, I think, this month with SWS, the World Socialist website or whatever, that did their list of remember the proper not list that came out? With all those Russian websites, propaganda websites. Well, And James Corbett was on there. It seems that all of those sites are being targeted, and they're seeing huge drops in numbers from Google search referrals because Google has adjusted their algorithm and now is taking into account, oh, these are Russian propaganda sites, as attested to by this anonymous group that no one knows anything about.
Happening. I tell you where we've seen this before. Those were activists in the 90s. To get targeted, to get delisted, to get made fun of, you had two phrases. One, you're anti-Semitic, or two, you were a Southern Poverty Law Center list of we need to get some on whatever the hell. And then you had law enforcement. Well, Southern Poverty Law Center said, so we get to go like raid them or something. Yeah, that's a justification for a warrant. You could see this already happening. Governments were already doing this. They were outsourcing their supported evidence of whatever the hell. Their probable cause was somebody with a memo. So this is what's happening now. Now, you have things like the two black women, Diamond and Silk or something. They're big conservative Trump supporters. They're up there doing, you know, yeah, girlfriend, let me tell you, you should be voting for Trump. You know, boom, off. OK, so this is it's so obvious. But what does that do? That opens up another method, you know, another platform, another a desire, a need. But they have to prevent it. They them those won't leave us alone. How do they prevent that? Well, I mean, they control and do and whatever and media and stuff. But when you go to the decentralized internet, when you have CubeSats, you know, I'm going to speak at Nexus Earth Conference in Aspen September 21st to the 23rd. And the whole point of that is decentralization of everything, the next wave of crypto and satellite and mesh network bite me. So when does that happen? I don't know. It's happening now. Will they be able to still control the minds of the people if they're not there? They don't have the eyes and ears. That's what broadcast television was. It went to the internet, and we got a good decade or more of, you know, we're over here. And they go, yeah, now we are too. Well, and we got to go over here again.
That's it.
And yep. I expect Mr. James Corbett report to be on the new net of something.
Exactly. Oh, that's what this alt tech revolution that you might have heard about is all about right now. All of these alternative platforms that people are now scrambling to make, the gab.ai and whatever else, all these, and you know, alternative social media sites that will be the rivals, the free speech promoting rivals to the free speech censoring.
Is Facebook any of them taken off?
It's too early to tell, but gab.ai just got delisted from the Google Play App Store, so whatever they call that, so that's a start, right? I mean, it's going to be a big fight, and it's going to be awfully hard because they're entrenched, and people like me have been screaming from the rooftops about this for years, but, you know, I'm just a crazy conspiracy theorist, what do I know? So, you know, now finally people are realizing, hey, we can create alternatives. We better do it now, by which I mean 5 years ago, but better late than never, I guess.
No, my screaming, of course it's coming. It's got to be off of DARPA's freaking grid. I'm going, no, where do you think the internet, where it came from, you know? It was Al Gore, or like him.
Well, the government, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what's the difference, you know? Yeah. So I'm going, all right, if we can have a method by which we can do all the same stuff, communicate, share, do blah, 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 without constant surveillance, what kind of people would we be? Would we be constantly watching real cat appults into cactuses, you know, by naked women with machine guns or something? I mean, you know what? Maybe. You know, a couple of, yeah, whatever, once. I mean, you're in high school and the internet, I mean, you're looking at everything, and then you can, okay, I'm good with that, I'm done, you know? So this is, I've seen it with my kids. They just made the decisions, again, yeah, okay, whatever. You can't even do that anymore. There's no exploring. There's no, you know, going in and immersing yourself and kind of finding who you are. So this is a new freedom, a revolution of thought that's going to spring back. It's the pendulum coming, the rubber band's going to snap, and we're going somewhere else. And I see it building up, and you're describing it.
Yep. And I'm just sitting here in the watchtower, seeing what's happening, seeing what's coming, knowing that this we were going to arrive at this spot at some point. And here it is. We're 2017. It is coming right now. And just in the last week, there's been so many stories about Cloudflare, of course, taking down the Daily Stormer or whatever, but also taking down Cody Wilson, Ghost Gunner, took down his site hosting.
Oh, yeah. Cody comes on this week, doesn't he? I talked to Cody Saturday, and he said, yeah, we're okay. I'm going, you got your sights down? Woo, Agorist Hosting, man, we got you covered. Let's go get some. And he goes, yeah, I got it covered. But, man, he was definitely wanting to out somebody for being a scumbag, you know, of taking him down when he's working with these guys for a long time. So, yeah, Cody Wilson, another neon flashing example. James Corbett, thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com. Report. CORBETT Report. And you get all that. This is just like in a week. You know, the guy, you know, what the hell, man? Has he got a life? Yeah. Informing you. Mr. James Corbett. Thanks, James.
Thank you.